I would like to tell you a story. Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest knife treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com.
Welcome 2019 to Knife Talk, the podcast for knife nerds, knife makers, and anybody with an appreciation of knives. I'm hosted by myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Mareko Malmasi of Malmasi Fire Arts, and Jeff...
Happy New Year.
Jeff Fader of Fader Knives.
Bong. How's everybody? Happy New Year, everybody. How is your vacation? Yeah. It's glad to be back. I hope you guys had a nice little bit of time off. And how is everybody? What's been everybody up to?
It's been a busy time. Yeah. So it feels like we haven't done this for so long because we pre-recorded a few episodes, didn't we, before Christmas?
Damn right we did.
For sure.
And Mareko's been away and we've all had our Christmas breaks. But it's been very good. So it was a relaxing Christmas. I've been back in the shop working on a bunch of knives, which will be stock knives to go up on the website, which will be available on Monday. So by the time you hear this... And just getting stuff in line, ready for a productive year, really. So I've got lots of plans, lots of things happening, a few collaborations, a few sort of special knives that I'll be unveiling over the coming months. Exciting stuff. I've gone into the new year feeling sort of invigorated. So, yeah, it's all good. All good.
That's good. And how are your children? How are your new babies?
They're perfect. Yeah. They're sleeping well. They're eating well. They're, at the end of the day, it's still every 3 hours they're waking up for feeds and so on, but you know, it's manageable.
That's,
it's all good.
That's pretty good. Pretty good. 3 hours is pretty good. They can sleep through 3 hours, pretty good.
Exactly. It's all good. It's all. What about yourself, Mareko? You've been away.
I have been away. Yeah, I just got back actually 2 days ago. It was a nice long 16-hour day of travel from the West Coast back to the East Coast. We had a flight delay that put us, like, there was an issue with one of the generators on the plane, so they're like, yeah, we can't use this plane, so they had us get off a plane and get on another. Problem for me is that sounds easy enough, except for I have our 2-year-old son, so I'm juggling my giant backpack, carry on, his car seat, strapping in and unstrapping those things is a pain in the ass. If anybody's ever had to do it, you know what I'm talking about. But and also I'm under the weather. I got a nice cold. So we got home safe. But the trip was good. It's great to see family. And as I announced last week, I am going to be moving back. So did a little work, little pounding the pavement, kind of check out some spots and some potential areas to start my new shop up when I get back into town, back into Olympia, Washington.
Nice.
Back into Olympia, Washington.
Yeah. It looks like you were forming the Legion of Doom, by the way. It looks like the Legion of Doom is being reunited.
Yeah, I was hanging out with Mr. Jeremy Spake and my buddy Ian Rogers of Haburn Knives. I also got a hold of my buddy Luis Pina.
Oh, yeah. Love Luis.
Pina Knives. Yeah, he's actually in Olympia, so it'll be cool to be super close to him. The guy, Jeremy and Ian are only about an hour and a half from me, or from that area, so that's not too bad. It's about as far as you are from me, Jeff, right now. And but yeah, it was good. The holidays were good. Got some nice little gifts. Got some new socks. Gotta love those trusty new holiday socks.
New socks and pants. Lovely.
Actually wearing a new pair of Carhartt pants myself right now. They're nice. They're so stiff. They can walk themselves. Great.
Well, and they're probably
this show is brought to you by Jeff's pants.
That's right, baby. Every time you wash them, they get a little stiffer. My wife used to wash these pants. When I get new Carhartt pants, she's just like, I pull them out of the washing machine and just stand them up, and they stand by themselves.
Teenage boy pants.
They're flannel lined, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Erection pants. Oh, sorry, 2019. We started off hard. Oh!
Jeff,
I'm sorry.
How was your Christmas? Apart from the new pants.
I worked through Christmas. I took Christmas Day off, which was nice. And then I worked the rest of the week. I only took 4 days off, and it was a very, very relaxing 4 days. I didn't think I could do it, but thanks to Tom McLean, sent me some hand cream, and I was massaging my disgusting hands for 4 days, and they feel so great and sharp and shiny. This is the hand-picked king. He knows how to take care of hands. So he sent me some some hand balm and I cooked some food and we relaxed and I went to the city, saw the Andy Warhol exhibit at the Whitney. That was fun. And it was very relaxing. And now I've been back at the shop this week and I'm fired up. Did some new things and got a few new things out and I'm fired up. Let's do this.
Cool. Very nice. So we've actually got a gift for our listeners. So we've got a new sponsor. So the biggest question we're always being asked is grinders. What grinders do you guys use and what can you recommend and what's cheap, what's available in the US, what's available in Europe and all the rest of it. So we've been in touch with AM Concepts, which is amtactical.com or AM Concepts with a K on Instagram. And Mareko is actually, he's just got one of their new grinders. But we'll go into that in just a minute. But we've got a gift for our listeners. So if you use the code AMK10 on their website, you're going to get 10% off any of their grinders. And I'll give you an example. Their AMK77, which is their sort of premium grinder with all the bells and whistles. It comes with a straight platen. It also got that 12-inch serrated wheel. That's just $1,399. But you also get this discount with using the promo code AMK10. So next time somebody asks us which grinders are good value for money, which are available in the US, AM Concepts, which is amtactical.com.
That's a really good price, especially if they're giving
that's
you
a really good price.
If they're giving you the even without the discount, if they're giving you the contact wheel too, that's a pretty good price.
Yeah,
really
good price.
Especially for that size contact wheel for sure.
Yeah,
it's a huge contact wheel. A contact wheel and a platen. Fantastic.
And we've talked about this grinder before because I know Mareko, you've used it, haven't you, at Neil Kamamura's place.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is why you've chosen one yourself as well. So it's all good. So show them some love on Instagram too. So AM Concepts, and Concepts is with a K. Go and have a look at their stuff. Very, very good value for money. They're shipping throughout the United States and Canada. And at very, very good prices.
Yeah, I can't wait to get it set up and grinding.
Grinding.
Boom, grinding.
So we've got a bit of a new section. So Jeff was talking about some of the mistakes that he's made, which, you know, they can be funny mistakes, they can be dangerous mistakes, they can be whatever. And lots of you have sent through your mistakes. This is a new section we're gonna call I'll Never Do That Again, I Hope, or a.k.a.
Shit,
which is pretty much what you say when you make a mistake. So the first one is from JS Metalwork, and he says, one time I was pouring all of my quench tank back into the bottle and something went wrong. He had half a gallon of oil all over himself and the shop, complete pain to clean up. Shit.
Been there.
Yeah,
I've done that.
Shit.
Oh, baby. Yeah. The oil thing is, I have a little quench. I have two quench tanks, one next to each other. And man, when I'm done just quenching, I got oil everywhere. I fucking hate it. That's the one thing about the oil I hate is just how much oil I get all over the place. But I can imagine pouring back that oil. I tell you what, I tried pouring back some of the coffee treatment into a smaller jar, man. That shit went everywhere, and that shit stained so bad. My hands were black by the time I finished, but I had a black, thick coffee everywhere, and that might be worse than the oil. Probably not.
At least it's just coffee. It's not poisonous or anything.
Yeah.
Talking about the oil, how often do you guys change your oil? I've heard stories about the oil getting better over time.
2,500 miles.
Boom, boom.
Oh, he's an early changer.
Terrible. So far, it's been bad. I've had bad jokes. That's fine. What can you do? Maybe Josh Scott can tell some bad joke impressions.
last night, I sent Jeff a message saying this. My wife was walking around the house, do an impression of Josh Scott, do an impression of Jeff. Blew my mind. Blew my mind.
We're gonna have to go.
Should have recorded it.
We're gonna have to go in depth on that whole thing. We've gotten some. There's a lot of ground to cover on that whole there impressions is. Of Jeff situation.
There is, but we've got regarding more, we've oil, got more though, mistakes, haven't we?
Yeah,
I think the oil lasts for quite a long time, especially in a custom setting, because you're not blasting through quenching blades all the time. It lasts for a pretty good bit of time. I would be surprised if it went bad before 5 or 10 years.
Really,
if Kevin Cashin does a heat treating guru, Kevin Cashin, and he's very concerned about how people what they're doing with their oil. And one of the things he says is that when you do that thing on Forge and Fire, where you let the fire, you know, it ignites when you pull it out, and it's not the oil igniting, it's like the fumes of the oil igniting. That really fucks your oil up. That's not good in the long term for your oil.
Right.
I've heard that.
It looks cool. Cash. Looks cool.
Yeah, it looks cool. Looks cool.
Fireball.
So
you got this next one.
Yeah, you got this one. Go ahead.
All right. So this one's from @Taurus Knifework, as in like T-A-U-R-U-S. Taurus, like the what is that? The astrological sign?
Or the worst car of all time. Ford Taurus. Go ahead.
Hey, I had a Taurus for a little
still
bit.
Still doesn't make it good. Just because you have it doesn't make it good.
This is true. Brakes went out on it pretty quick. It was terrible. All right. I used a circular saw one time for a G10. It bent the saw blade so bad and threw a chunk of G10 straight back into my eye. It was the last time I cut G10 on a miter saw. That stuff's stronger than steel. Be careful. And my most embarrassing is gluing up handles before heat treating the blade was by far the best moment. Ha 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 ha.
Shit. I think we've all done that.
Yeah, I've done that.
The cutting the G10 on a circular saw sucks. It definitely actually, I buy new blades a little bit too often when I'm cutting down G10, but it shoots splinters, like tiny splinters everywhere, and it's really fucking terrible. So, it sucks.
I generally use a bandsaw for that anyway. I think table saws scare the hell out of me.
Well, what I do is I bring my table saw outside and then I cover up like everywhere and I try to just cut it down, because I'm buying sheets. And if you want to get straight cuts, the bandsaw doesn't work. And a lot of the guys use, and a lot of times, I mean, the bandsaw is nice and all, but the G10 screws your belt, your blades up, and you can't get super flat. I'm a circular saw. I do a circular saw. I get a pile of sheets and then I trim them all in one day. And then I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Interesting.
Fair enough.
G10. All right.
Table saw.
This comes from Shipbard. I can't believe I didn't temper my competition cutter high enough, and it snapped in half on a 2x4 on a Wednesday night. The competition was on a Friday, and I had to make a whole new knife on Thursday.
Shit. Oh, Jesus.
Shit. He didn't do it right. He broke it. He broke it before the competition. Well, probably better if he broke it before the competition and he'd be able to do it again.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Have you guys ever entered competitions? Any sort of competition for your knives?
Not for my knives.
Forged in Fire. I mean,
what the fucking question is that? What do you hate on those two-time competition guy?
I was gonna recommend that show later. I come across it over Christmas. I thought you guys should watch that. This show, Forged in Fire. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, I was like, yeah, none of us have been on any kind of competitions. I was in a sailboat competition when I was in summer camp. Fucking won 2 years in a row, baby. 2 years in a row. Don't get me on a sailboat.
I've only entered knives into like being judged and being torn apart. But no physical competitions where they're chopping through stuff. Oh, actually, I did. I'm an idiot. I held a chef's knife competition a few years back where I had a few knife makers submit knives, and then the knives were put through a bunch of testing by a couple judges, and then the knives were auctioned off and the money went to nonprofit organizations.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was good. It was fun.
Yeah.
All fun and games.
But talking about competitions, and, you know, we just mentioned Forged in Fire, have you seen the spin-off, that Knife or Die?
Death. Man. Knife or
knife
death.
Or death.
Yes.
One,
I like
yes.
Knife or Die. Knife or Die is a better name.
Knife or Death. Man, knife it's just like watching wrestling. It's brutal.
Well, you got Goldberg on there. It's already partly a little bit like wrestling.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, if somebody watches that, cool. But I think it is a little bit of, I don't know. I don't really dig it myself.
Yeah.
Shout out to FS Blades, our boy Frankie Sostos. He gets his knives on there all the time. He's a New York guy. Shout out to Frankie.
Well, my shopmate Peter Swarsbert was on the damn thing.
That's right. That's right. Look at all this competition. There's a lot of competition. Let's get
crazy.
Through it.
Competition crazy.
Who's next?
The next one we've got, I think it's Phi Knight, PHI Knight on Instagram. One of his most hated mistakes to make goes like this. Oh, yeah, that's some good heat treat, that is. Good and hard and tempered for hours and hours. And where are the holes for the pins in the tang? Oh, for fuck's sake. I forgot to drill them first.
Shit.
Yeah, not drilling before hardening is not going to be good. Not going to be
well,
good.
But you could just get the torch out and just, you know, keep the blade cool and then hit it with the torch. You know, some you could.
That's what I was gonna say.
That's what a lot of these. Yeah, that's what these a lot of these guys do. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's armchair quarterback here. It's like, yo, why don't you do that? You know, so it's like, what can you do?
Yeah.
But it sucks.
All right, we got another one from Brian Rackin. I never know how to say Brian's name, but
dude,
if you guys go check
him
out,
we're getting everybody's name wrong. We're getting everybody's name wrong.
R A Q U I N, Brian Rackin. Or Rakin is he's a French maker, I believe. Chef's knife maker. He does some really good work. All right. He says, I already made a sandmai with steel core outside the billet. Oof. Not iron, steel, iron, but iron, steel.
Oh, I love that one. That one's a bad one. Because you can't really.
Yeah, that's brutal.
You know, the whole, even with the pins, with the hardened steel, you could always, you know, you could bring it back, but. That sandmai ain't bringing it back. That one, you ain't bringing that one back.
Well, you just got to make a Japanese style single bevel, or where you only have the hardened steel on the bottoms.
If you just cut it in half, couldn't you cut it in half and forge weld the steel sides together, or forge weld the other sides together? Cut it in half, forge the other sides together, and then
you're talking about like a splitting and folding it so that the into two pieces and then the. Yeah, the steel
and then you
in the
could
core.
Do the,
yep,
right.
That's
then you
a good
a,
move.
You have a double. You got that double jacket. You got that double jacket right there. All right. Well, we're saving. We're armchair. We're armchair quarterbacking these motherfuckers. I'm sure poor Radio Rakim is saying, all of a sudden it's so great. Where were you when I needed you? All right. Here comes.
Thanks for the invite,
Radio Rakim. All right. Shout out to Spike Lee. All right. So Fenton Knives says, on my first attempt at making a knife, I didn't have any power tools yet. So I spent 3 days hand filing the shape of the knife out of a piece of 1095 bar stock. And after all that, I accidentally started filing the bevel towards the spine and towards the spine side. And I wanted the edge to be where I wanted the edge to be, and I had to scrap it. So he basically filed. It's a backwards ass knife right there. That's a backwards ass knife.
I've done similar things where quite often I'll have a handle which sort of bends down a bit. So when I'm drilling the scales, I'll drill them both the same. So when you go to put it together, it's like, fuck.
Yeah.
The scales pointed up the wrong way.
Scales
on the wrong side.
Done that one.
Aaron, what's this?
Meliza.
Aaron?
It's Meliza. He contacted another guy. He's a great guy. It's Meliza.
It's Meliza. Okay.
Right. That's
Aaron
why
Meliza.
I spelled it. Like, that's why I spelled it like that.
Yeah, these are Jeff's show notes we're going through here.
Phonetic.
One day I was out back welding some scrap steel together, and I had to cut a piece of 3/4-inch round bar. So I dug out the cutting torch, kind of dialed the flame in for cutting, and basically melted the last 4 inches off this bar. So he means that the bar was glowing 5 inches in either direction of what he was actually cutting. The red hot end of his bar finally comes off and falls to the ground, shuts the torch off, shuts off the tanks, takes his gloves off, you know what's coming. He bleeds the gas out of the lines, sets the torch down, then he picks up the still glowing red bar with his bare hands.
Oh. Jesus Christ.
So he's holding the bar, and he distinctly remembers wondering what that strange sensation, probably the smell as well, yeah. as the skin on his palm burnt.
It's a very porky, it's a smell of pork.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
And then his boss said, how come we don't have any more acetylene? Because he obviously didn't turn the oxygen on right. He's like, what happened to all the acetylene? Aaron, why does your hand smell like bacon, and where's all the acetylene?
That's gnarly. I'm not going to do this one in the terrible British accent that I tried the other day, but this is from our friend Swift Knives UK. On my first batch of blades, I spent 2 hours trying to hand sand out a weird thin scratch. Then I realized it was a crack in the blade.
Fucking hell, me, Bobby.
Fucking hell.
That sucks, man. It happens. If you get lucky, you see it before that happens. And then the good thing is about the hand sanding is if you're scratching going to the tip to the heel, if there's a crack, the crack's going to be going from the spine to the edge. So if you get lucky, you catch it before you spend too much time on it.
Hmm. Exactly. That is definitely a benefit versus having all vertical lines.
Oh, yeah.
Is that you can catch those.
Because it's, you don't see them until you go really deep. And if you don't get that, blah, blah, blah. All right. So here's from Caffeine Forge. I was using a 1x30 sander with a leather belt to strop a knife. I wasn't thinking about the knife to the belt with the edge up. The knife was thrown straight to the ground and the belt was ruined.
Oof.
I fucking did that with a oyster knife. I was clean. I love the Scotch-Brite belts. They're so expensive, but they're great, especially for my oyster knives. They just kind of clean everything up.
Hmm.
And I don't know what I was getting. I wasn't thinking. I don't know what I was thinking about. And then I pointed the oyster knife straight up. And my oyster knives have a little bit of a curl on the tip, because that's for when you're shucking the oyster and you're butt shucking. But you're butt shucking your oyster, you go over the top of the shell. And if it's curved, it allows you to kind of separate the abductor muscle a little easier. Well, I went up, and then that curve caught the Scotch-Brite belt and fucking shot that thing into the ground and put a huge hole. It's not like, most of these belts, when they tear, they pop. And if you're lucky, they pop and then just fall off, because once they're broken, they're not sent anywhere. But the Scotch-Brite belt holds what it's got, and it's got this big-ass hole in it, and it's terrifying, totally terrifying.
Slapping around.
Yeah. Slapping around.
Not good. And especially,
I've done that with a buffer.
Worst. I've actually, when I was in a metal shop, we were making bronze escutcheon plates, and we were mirror finishing on a buffer, and it was like a angle bar square frame, and I fucking caught that. I caught that buffer with this bronze piece. It took that thing and shot it across the room. It was terrifying. And because it's bronze, it looked like it would have been like smushed. I fucking destroyed it, but it was the most terrifying thing of all time. Buffers, terrifying.
Buffers. I mean, what I tend to do now is, I think we talked about this before, is clamp it to a 2x4 or something if I'm using a buffer.
Yeah.
But I did something very similar just this week, but on the drill. So I was drilling through really thin stock of brass, which I was going to use for liners. And brass, as you know, it can be, because it's soft, it's probably great for machinists because they can, it's malleable and whatever. But if you're using very small, sheets of it to drill, it leaves these horrible burrs and it's really grabby and so on.
Yeah.
I didn't clamp it down to the drill press, and it just helicoptered up. And I did that stupid thing, in the heat of it all, I put my hand up to stop it, and it's just gone straight across my palm. But
that all the time.
Got to be careful.
Did it cut you?
Yes, quite badly. But it's okay. I mean, it's okay. But it's just, it's a stupid thing to do. The instinct is just to put your hand out to stop it, which is crazy.
That's the king of the "I'll never do that again." I hope.
Yeah.
That's the king. That I do. I still do that. And it's always, and somebody already even put that in here, but that's always. It's always because, if it's an eighth of an inch, bronze is different, brass is different, but if it's eighth of an inch, 3/16 up to a quarter, it doesn't usually catch. It always catches at the very end, right before it breaks through. It's like you've hardened the material. Yeah. The material gets harder. And then by the time you get to that little edge, it just catches and there's nothing behind it. Or the drill bit will kind of press through. And then when it presses through without cutting, it catches there. And that's what sends you into helicopter mode. I hate that.
Not good. Not good.
Fuck that shit.
Well, we've got bunch.
And I'll do it tomorrow. And I'll do it tomorrow. Guaranteed. Yeah,
exactly.
Do it tomorrow.
Okay, so we've got a few more, but what we'll do, we'll save these up for the coming weeks, because this could be a show talking about mistakes and, you know,
yeah,
it's a new year. Let's go into this positive with a bit of positivity.
That's it. Boom.
But the last one of today then is from Jeremy Spake.
Yeah.
Big fan of the show.
Best one today.
So, yeah, buddy.
So maybe 2-3 years ago, and this is Jeremy's voice. I'm not going to do the voice, but I'm reading it from his perspective.
So, member of the Legion of Doom, I might add.
So maybe 2-3 years ago, I was sick and tired of not having a knife of my own to carry. It was getting ridiculous. So I had some quasi downtime. That's a very quasi downtime. Not quite sure what that means.
A little bit of downtime. It was kind of downtime.
A little bit of downtime.
Quasi.
Okay.
Quasi.
It's
fucking quasi.
I think of Quasimodo when I think of quasi.
Then you're wrong. It's fine. Just keep going. Go ahead, shit.
So I decided this would be the time to do it. He's going to make his own knife. A few months back, so he'd been through a series of Sanmai testing with 52-100 and 416 stainless and came across beautifully laminated little 3.5-inch blade that is almost completely finished. So he already had the design in his sketchbook and he was able to put the knife together over a weekend. Very, very proud of his new knife. Looked lovely and felt just right. So on a Sunday night, he commenced to the sharpening. Just a really quick job. It was late and I wanted to show off the next day at work. So during his show and tell with friends, it didn't really cut paper as nicely as he did expected. This is going on. This is a long story. But hey, he was in a hurry when he sharpened it. Shit, where am I? This is too long. I'm stuck in a big block of text.
Come on, man.
So he was in a hurry when he sharpened it, and he came home determined to get it laser sharp, ready for the next day. But he just wasn't getting the edge that he wanted. But hey, he thought, he's sort of been in a lull when making sharpening, so I guess he was just rusty. So he carried on for a little bit more, but became increasingly dissatisfied with his edge. So one night after a vigorous session at the Whetstones, with no satisfaction.
Oh no!
It sank
vigorous
in.
Session, baby.
He hadn't hardened the blade. He'd set it aside halfway ground, and assumed that he'd remember when he came to do it. But hadn't hardened. And I've done that. I've got bunches of knives, you know, blanks that I've sort of roughed out, and I don't know what state they're in. But so. He ends this with, he still doesn't have a knife of his own.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah, well, there you go. Shout out to Legion of Doom.
That's probably one of my bigger mistakes that I've made in the past year is I finished ground a couple knives. And I was like, God, these knives are super flexible. I don't understand what's going on. And I was like, wait a second. And I just grabbed it along the spine and just bent it, flexed it, and it kept the bend. And I was like, Jesus, I didn't harden these yet. And at this point, I already have, like, they're both Damascus. They're both mosaic Damascus. So I have probably 3 or 4 days of work in each, just making the Damascus, then forging out the blade. I probably have, like, 5 days of work, at least, in each of these knives. And I tried to reheat treat. They still had a little bit of mass on them. So I was like, all right, I'll try heat treating them. Both of them came out fucking garbage. And I was just like, I was so pissed because I can't use them now. The edges, I had already taken them too thin. So they were like waving and waffling down the edge. And it was heartbreaking. So I know how that feels. Exactly.
So
I like the 25th hour audio sample, by the way.
Yeah, it was very last minute. And I wonder if any of our listeners can guess where I got the audio sample from. DM us.
Good. DM you.
DM us. So we're going to leave our mistakes there and everybody's mistakes there for next week. We'll do some more next week because we've got this big ton of them. And I think there's some good tips in there as well, you know, things not to do, you know, things you can learn from. So we'll leave them.
Crane's Community Showcase.
Community Showcase. So we're changing the show up a bit. So this was originally Craig's Community Showcase, but now for each section, all three of us are going to have an input. So my Community Showcase this week is, it was actually, this was recommended from by Bob Rankin. And I'd seen this guy's work before anyway, but Bob sent me a message and said, this guy's work is incredible. And he makes handle material, he makes scales, and it's Rob's Wildwood. So he does these, well, the best I've seen. Best I've seen. Now, I think I've said that before, but another maker. But looking back now at Rob's work, it's incredible. So this amazing burls and stuff that all stabilized. And he makes everything perfect ready for you. Everything is perfectly flat. There's no none of this stabilizing resin sticking out. It's everything's perfect, ready to be drilled, ready to be used. So take a look at Rob's Wildwood. He does it with his son. It's a father and son business.
Yes.
Robswildwood.com. And just some of the most outstanding colors and finishes that I've ever seen.
I spent some money on his. I met him and his son at Blade Show, and I spent some money on it. He had some of the most beautiful scales, wood scales I'd seen. We spent some money with him. It was worth every penny too.
Yeah.
I gotta add too, he does something very interesting with some of the handle materials that he makes. He actually makes them by creating these wood laminating techniques where he's like,
yes,
splitting them apart and putting them back together, like this mosaic woodwork. It's pretty freaking crazy. I love it, and I've been very, very interested to get a hold of some of that, or possibly try to design some for him to then turn around and make.
There you go.
But yeah, it's super, super cool stuff.
Miracles, yeah, so Pattern Wood Wednesdays. Sure.
His
there you go.
Their scales were just, I mean, like, they're kind of a step above. The ones I saw, we were looking around, I was like, they were, I mean, pretty amazing. It was hard not to spend a lot of money with them.
I've just had an idea. So you do your Pattern Weld Wednesdays where you take your shapes and you draw them out and you show people how you've done it. You imagine having a matching handle of the same sort of as the steel.
Is this giving away my secret?
Is this the new bit? You know what you should do?
It is. Yeah.
You know what you should do? Hey, Mareka, you know what you should do? You should go on that show where the competition knife chopping show. That's what you should do.
But how cool would that be? Having your sort of Damascus pattern replicated in wood. Wood-ascus. Let's call it Wood-ascus. Trademark.
Thanks for letting the cat out of the bag.
Yeah.
I have been thinking about that, and that's kind of what I was talking about. Mm. Sending him some designs to essentially replicate what's happening in the steel into the handle.
That could be cool. Wood Ascus coming your way soon.
Wood Ascus? That's terrible. That is terrible.
Jeff, who were you highlighting this week?
I'd like to go with someone that most of our listeners know, but I'm a very big fan. Most of you are too. Is the New Jersey Steel Baron. That's NJ_Steel Baron on Instagram. Most of you know them. They're one of the best knife steel suppliers in the United States. It's Aldo Bruno and his son Peter. I love those guys. One thing I will say, a lot of people ask is where you get your steel. And, you know, people say, well, would you ever use a circular saw blade? When you're getting steel from the New Jersey Steel Baron, not only do they get very specific steel, it's always in good shape, but if you buy their steel on their website and you have a problem with heat treating, they have all the information on how you should heat treat it. They also sell that jacketed core steel. You know what I'm talking about. They give you all whatever you need. Pete is also very easy to get a hold of. Actually, at one time I was heat treating some Nitro V or some AEBL, and I was having a little hard time. And then they put Aldo on the phone, and he gave me the whole. You know, he got on the phone and told me exactly what to do. They're an awesome company, and also Pete started to do. He does water jet cutting. So if you wanted to get stuff water jet cut, you can send him. He just water jet cut some oyster knives for me. They do a nice job. The prices are good. They do a lot. It's a small family joint. Everybody should know the New Jersey Steel Baron. The Brunos are great. Pete's a dynamite guy. You can get on the phone with them easy. And they're very, like, They're very in the community. They're very great. They don't do as much on social media as they should, and it's a good company to support. I like the Steel Baron. Everyone knows the Steel Baron.
You know what? It's interesting what you were saying then about a family business. So just thinking about the sort of businesses that I wouldn't say recommend, but you know the businesses that we use. We got Even Heat, family business.
Yeah.
Just mentioned Rob's Wildwood, family business. NJ Steel Baron, family business. AM Concepts, who we got on board as our new sponsor, family business. It's all good. Right. It's all good.
Well, it's, you know, there's something to be said about that. You know, you're standing behind it and your family's involved and you believe in it. There's a sincerity there. There are good people, you know.
Good people. Good people.
Absolutely.
Mareko, who are you highlighting this week?
Okay. I want to highlight somebody that I don't understand actually how I only just discovered them. I feel like maybe I've seen some of the work before. But anyways, his name is Worker Man. Oh. And it's all it's abbreviated, so it's WKRMN, and he's actually from Minnesota, so there's a little play on acronym there.
He's been on the show before.
Worker Man, has he?
He's been on the show. I interviewed him, in the old format.
Oh, I
of the
feel
show.
Like an I'm such an asshole.
So we just found anyway. Out that Mareko didn't listen to the older episodes.
That's fine. It's fine. Hey, listen. Hey, you know what you should do? Hey, Mareko, you know what you should do? You should look at the archives, homie.
We'll see. Yeah, I should. So I'm not such an idiot. No, so anyways, so go listen to his earlier interview.
There you go.
Craig.
Plug for the archives. Get it.
There you go. Plug for. But really, his work is phenomenal. I love it. He does a lot of friction folders, which means there's no locks. They have like a little tab that that flips up off the tang that you kind of pushes the blade around, and he does these awesome inlays, and he does really clean work, and I am just absolutely enamored with it. I constantly find myself rolling back through his feed, looking at some of his stuff because it's so cool.
What's his Instagram? I love it. What's his Instagram?
It's WKRMN.
Welcome.
Right. And it's like an abbreviation or slash. Acronym.
He's got 18,500 followers. That boy didn't need our help.
Yeah.
That boy didn't need our help.
I mean, we're here to help people, but we're also here to recognize some folks doing good stuff.
Whoever you want. You know what you should do?
Obviously, keep Craig already did that part of the job.
You should keep on going. This is a bad motherfucker right here. I admit, too, I didn't listen to his. I'm going to go listen to that.
Aha!
Yeah, no, I cop too. I gave
right.
you Fritz, but I didn't listen either. I'm going to listen now.
But no, right. Seriously, nice. Yeah, Mareko is completely right. His stuff is incredible. I think he sells scales that he makes as well. I think they're called blood money. So he takes notes, you know, dollar notes, rips them up or shreds them, and he casts them in resin, and he puts this like blood substitute in there. It looks really cool, really cool.
Well, I'm sure he's not shredding them because technically that's illegal.
Technically,
perhaps the inspectors just arrived. Watch out, everybody! Inspectors.
It's monopoly money. Monopoly money, maybe.
Jeez,
right?
Jeez, what a stickler.
Anyways, Worker Man, you're badass. I'm gonna go listen to your show right now because I'm an idiot and I should have heard it already. I'm sorry.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
All right. As you know, we get questions we ask our listeners some questions. So we got a few good questions here, and let's get to it. So first, hey, man, can I ask you a question, comes from at ch.futschkel.
Rolls off the tongue again.
What the fuck? These names are the worst. Chfutschkel. Chfutschkel. I don't know what the fuck. Chfutschkel. He wants to know.
Looks like it's German.
Or something. Futschkel. I don't know what the hell that means. All right. I do stock removal knives with circular saw blade steel. Is that a good type of steel? And how do I heat treat it? Fits right in with the New Jersey Steel Baron.
Yes.
I got to say, unless you test it, I advise using known materials because realistically, they're not really that expensive. They're easier to work with, and they have a known heat treating schedule.
And the price is about the. I mean, you're gonna get. I mean, whatever a circular saw blade is, what, $10? You're going to get the 15, same amount
yeah,
for...
Depending what you're getting, yeah. It could be up to $30.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get a... You can get a slight... You can get a piece of 1084 for, like, under $20. You know, 4 feet of it, for sure.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah. But I will say this is kind of... I want to give a little shout-out to my buddy Chris Zepp of Make Everything Shop. He listens to the podcast. If you're going to... He just did a YouTube video on how to make a knife with only $100 and Harbor Freight. Well, he bought $100 worth of Harbor Freight stuff and made a knife out of it, and he used a circular saw blade. It isn't optimal, but he shows you how to just, you know, make it happen. Chris Zepsa, he just did that with the circular saw blade seal. Look, all these guys, they watch these movies like that Tommy Lee Jones movie with Benicio del Toro. You know that movie, The Hunted? You guys see that movie?
Hunted, yeah.
No.
It's about these two guys. They're like super special ops, but they're like primitive. They're like into primitiveness. And, you know, their one guy likes to hunt people. You know, they're both like, you know, the assassins. And then they have this big final, you know, battle. These two, you know, old Tommy Lee Jones and dumb Benicio del Toro. And they're making their knives. And you see Benicio del Toro found a leaf spring and he's forging it on a, you know, a I-beam, and Tommy Lee Jones is like chipping away this piece of stone. And it's just all very much along the lines of like, look, go fucking stop it with defining the leaf springs. Go get yourself some nice steel from the New Jersey Steel Baron and just use your head.
Hmm. And stop. I don't know where Chafutskill is from, but wherever you are, you can get steel. So,
yeah,
you know, if you can't get it from any of the... So we've got a list, actually, on knifetalk.net of reputable suppliers.
And these guys will tell you how to heat treat it. These guys will tell you what to do. You know,
exactly. They'll all do mail order. Yeah. They'll all send out in the post. But if you've got nothing in your country, I mean, even on looking on eBay, knife suppliers are using eBay now to list their stuff as well. So
right.
It's so cheap. You might as well just buy a nice surface ground billet, which is ready to go.
And how many knives can you get a circular saw blade anyway? Hmm. You're going to make two little guys and what, have a hole in the middle? What are you going to do with that? That's bullshit.
Well, knock, I mean, I we do, you know, our man, Jared Thatcher, does work with repurposed materials. I myself have made some knives from repurposed materials, but the thing is, we know what we are working with.
But you're
with.
Also forging them. So you're getting a little bit more out of it than you would if you're stock removal.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, yeah, versus stock removal. But I guess the key I'm getting at is if you're going to use repurposed material, send out samples and have them tested so you know what you're working with. Because you could be just working with some piece of shit steel that had carbide teeth brazed onto it.
Mm. Uh-oh.
You know, I'm just saying that some saw blades are made that way.
The file knife community is all passed out. They all passed out. File knife community is passed out. All of them passed out.
Have you seen the video? We got tagged, that Knife Talk podcast got tagged by somebody's video this week. They made a file knife and he wanted to test it. So he put in a vise and he's trying to bend it to snap it. Have you seen the video?
And he pulled the vise out of the vise out of the table, right?
More than once. Yeah.
That's what happens when you screw your vise down. I mean, sorry, spoiler alert. You know, it's like, come on, man. Gotta go long bolts, baby.
Bolt it down.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
We've got a great question here, actually. Cunningham Knives has asked about kitchen knives. Are there any other acceptable knife finishes besides hand finishing? What do you guys think?
You know what? I think that is a very guarded. The real question is I fucking hate hand sanding.
Yeah.
Because that is a totally like, are there any other acceptable finishes? Like, I fucking hate this shit. What else can I do? Look, do whatever you got to do. You know, there's a lot of guys who do a nice job with a belt finish. I mean, off the belt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's also kind of the standard finish for commercially manufactured knives is either vertical, like a satin finish, or a mirror polish, basically. But I think that the real thing about hand sanding is it indicates that it's like, it's one of the key indicators that it's a handmade knife.
Exactly.
That somebody took the time to hand sand the blade.
Yeah.
So it's a great way to differentiate your work from something that can be bought at the five and dime.
Yeah. And I think it's about your time as well. I mean, everybody's got price point. They're trying to sell their knives at a certain price point. If you're going the lower end of the scale and you're putting 6 hours of hand sanding in, you're not making any profit. You know, you're going to go out of business. So it's a case of how much you're selling your knife for, whether you can put those hours in. But I mean, Jeff's talked about in detail in the past how he's cut down on his time hand sanding by doing a lot of prep work beforehand.
If you're spending more than 2 hours on a satin finish on a chef's knife, you got to reevaluate. Yeah. It shouldn't be that long. It shouldn't be. I mean, an hour and a half maximum for a simple. I'm not talking satin finish to fucking 2500 grit. I'm talking about a simple satin finish to 800 grit. But I mean, you know, at the same time, it's like I'm, you know, it's taken me a long time to get to the point where I can do a knife, and we can do about a stainless steel knife is going to take you twice as long as a carbon steel knife, and I just hand sanded a carbon steel knife in under an hour. But you know, look, there's a lot of levels to this game, as they say, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, even Bob Kramer, he machine finishes. At least when I was still working for him, he was machine finishing his blades, so they had vertical scratches, but he was taking it up to about 1200 grit machine finish. And you have to be pretty mindful of what you're doing to be able to take it that high, and not accidentally leave behind, you know, some 60 or 120 grit scratches.
If you want to see great finishing from the machine, go and look at Fingal Ferguson's stuff.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't do any hand sanding, and he has the most amazing finishes. And he let me into a bit of a secret about some of the wheels that he's using. So he's using Scotch-Brite wheels on a bench grinder as opposed to belts.
No, you just gave a secret.
Yeah. Well, it's an open secret. It's an open secret. But, but you know, whatever works for you. But
hey, you know what you should do? You should keep your mouth shut. Don't tell everybody his secrets.
He happily shared that with me and said that, you know, I could share it on. But I'm certainly not giving credit. It's Fingal Ferguson's way of doing it, and it's beautiful. Go and have a look at his stuff.
The key is it's the plunge line. If you have a plunge line, it's almost impossible to do. You can do a belt finish going vertically if you don't have a plunge line. You know, because if you're on the platen or you're using contact wheel with it and you're changing the directions with that, as long as you're being careful. You know, you can, but if you got a plunge line, you're out.
Yeah.
Got to hand sand it, unless you're going the horizontal route.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
All right. Michael Crispin is asking, what's the knife community's opinion on homemade crucible / Woots steel?
Perfect person to read the question.
Yeah, this is all yours, Morocco.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay. Oh, you guys don't have any opinions?
Well, why don't you tell us what the fuck Woots is? You guys like, what makes it Woots?
Woots is a crucible steel, so it means it's melted down into a cake inside of a crucible, which a lot of people use crucibles to melt down other kinds of metals as well to kind of consolidate it, and you know. My shopmate, Peter Swarsbert, would actually be a better... Maybe I'll get him up on the Knife Talk podcast or Instagram. We'll do a little chitty chat over there.
Well, is Woots a dude, though? It's like, where did that fucking word come from? Woots, it's got to be like a dude. Jimmy Woots.
It's not a dude.
It's Jimmy Woots.
I don't know what language it comes from, but it just refers to steel that's made through a certain way. Similar steels were made in Russia, as well in India and Persia, and they're all ingot or crucible steels. So my biggest issue with crucible steels is people making it but not really knowing how. Like, making the cake is actually kind of the easy part. Reducing that cake down or the ingot down into something that can actually be turned into a functional knife is a totally different story. And there aren't really a whole lot of people in the country who can really do that. I fortunately share a shop with possibly one of the best guys in the country. Obviously, there's Rick Furr, Rick Fur in Wisconsin, and or maybe it's Fuhrer. I can never remember how to say his name wrong. Say his name right. So sorry, Rick, if I'm butchering your name. But anyways, he's not listening, don't worry. maybe a couple other people. Listen. Hey, he's a pretty well informed guy. But anyways, yeah. But Peter, my shopmate, is possibly one of the only makers in the country. As well as possibly around the world, who actually makes his Woots steel and can reduce it down in a way that he can actually send it to somebody and they can use it the same way they're using some of the steel that they may be sourcing from, like, New Jersey Steel Burn. So the trick is understanding how to forge it, though, and that just comes from the maker, like, whoever your source is. So Peter actually sends out, he's got a whole worksheet about how to heat treat it, how to bring out the patterning, how to forge, because realistically, like, they, because of its extreme high carbon content, you want to forge in a very kind of a specific forging range, because if you let it get too hot, it does this thing called hot shorting, and there are a lot of steels that are commercially manufactured that will also hot short, which means it gets hot, and then if you start working it at too high of a temperature, it'll start crumbling. It'll start crumbling and turning to, like, this mushy, like, melted, gritty, sandy kind of texture, and basically go to shit. So you got to be careful using it, but it produces an incredible, if it's done right, it produces an incredible blade. The ingots that I've worked with from Peter and forged out into chef's knives, they take some of the best edges. I've, like, the most aggressive, toothy edges. And part of that is because of the carbides that are formed in the material, as well as it being actual hardenable steel versus, ancient stuff. They weren't hardening it, so they were actually relying on those carbides in the steel to help lend some of that edge retention, wear resistance, and kind of toothy sharpness. But anyways, I don't know if I even really answered his question.
Yeah, you did.
If you got a good source, it's fucking good stuff. If you don't, though, you better
ask somebody.
I hope you didn't pay too much for it.
You better ask somebody.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
Okay, this one comes from Lake 1978. Do you need to have a TIG welder to weld together mosaic billets, or will a MIG welder work?
I'm out. I think that's not what you do, but I'm assuming that a 70 amp, you know, really cheap MIG welder is not going to do the job. But I don't know.
But you don't need to. You're not. You don't have to lay down dimes. You just have to hold it together tight enough so when you hit it under the hammer, it holds together. It doesn't really matter, right?
Well, you can do it under the press too. There are makers, I won't talk about their technique of doing it, but they use a MIG welder and they're setting up and creating some of the sweetest mosaic Damascus that's being made in the United States. And they're doing it a very minimalist way. And so, no, you don't need a TIG welder. I've done it actually myself with a MIG welder. I did plenty of mosaic before I joined Dragon's Breath Forge, and I didn't have a TIG welder. I had a shitty Harbor Freight MIG welder that was handed down to me from a friend. So, you don't need a TIG welder.
But the key really is you just need to make sure you have enough room that whatever the wire, you know, the difference between a MIG and a TIG is the MIG is a wire feed welder. You don't want to add too much of that alloy to where your pattern is going to be. But as opposed to a TIG, where you have traditionally you're welding with a filler rod, but in actuality you don't need a filler rod. You can fuse the steel together, and you kind of weld. You're not really welding; you're fusing it, and you're not adding a different material. So, obviously, a TIG welder is going to give you a little bit more a cleaner steel, so to speak, because you're not incorporating a third, another element. But if you have a MIG, as long as you're not, like, doing it in the middle, and you don't want to incorporate the weld, the different alloy into whatever your Damascus is.
Yeah, and I've seen people, and I've actually done this before, where you wrap the whole all the welds in MIG, and it's doable and actually works. The trick though is there's an intermediate step where you have to, after you've set the weld and you feel good about it, you have to let that billet cool down, and then you got to clean up the faces, at least the faces, if not the whole thing, just to so you can do a quick etch, and in that etch, it will show you where the pattern is and where that, and then where it's washed out from the MIG, and then you got to chase the MIG with an angle grinder and like a quarter inch little 4-inch disc, and grind that stuff out, and then once you've got it all out, then continue forging. But that's all. There are other ways of approaching it. That is a kind of a pain in the ass way of doing it, but.
But it
works.
But it works because you're not going all the way, and then all of a sudden you got like a fucking bit of, you know, MIG wire middle of your thing.
That's the worst thing that could happen, and I've definitely had that happen to blades, just because it's something that didn't get caught as I was forging or cleaning it up and forging out a blade, and so that got scrapped.
I actually saw a guy who was trying to be very clever and use the end of his billet. And then he said, "Well, I'm going to put the welded end where I welded on the stick to hold the where the tongs grip on, and I'm just going to stick that part in the tang. I'll be the hidden part in tang part. So I'll get crafty." Sure. And then all of a sudden, he didn't go far enough, and out of the connection, you could see all the MIG weld.
That's
once bitten, twice shy, as they say. Ha ha ha.
Well, now it's all of our notes to a knife maker, because I think we all got a little something to share today. But my little note today is on painter's tape. So I talked about, or I mentioned painter's tape, I think that was a few weeks ago, talking with Jeff about masking the blade off while sharpening. And especially on a Damascus, that will help. I know it helps me feel just a little bit more confident that I'm not going to mess up the face of the steel. But the other thing that's really cool about painter's tape is I've had really good success buffing stuff with the painter's tape attached, and the painter's tape not smearing or getting all over the place. I've had issues with using electrical tape as a kind of a mask. If say like I finished out my handle on my Integral Chef's knife and I mask off the bolster because that's steel, I want to buff up the handle, but I don't want to buff the steel. I've used electrical tape and the buffer just heats up and melts that electrical tape and makes a big old nasty mess, and I get pissed. I cannot remember, and I wish I could remember who I saw the first time using painter's tape in this way, but they essentially, instead of using the electrical tape, they used painter's tape. And they masked off an area, and then they buffed right up to the edge of that painter's tape. Painter's tape didn't do anything. And then when they were done, just peeled right off as it should. And it was a revelation for me. And so now I could make it work not using a painter's tape, but painter's tape makes a huge difference in my knife making. It's definitely one of those things that is kind of a game changer for me. And that's just my little note and tip for today.
Nice.
Tippy poo.
So my little tip is, it's actually two things, but it's all based around time. So we're in quite a privileged position as hosts of this show, where we get lots of advice given to us as well. You know, we ask people to ask us questions, but people answer them and all sorts. But the question that I'm asked a lot about is from new knife makers asking how to sort of level up. You know, they've made a few knives and they want to be better, but they're looking for tips to how to be better. But I'd say it's time. Take your time. And I'm as guilty as anybody in this, as where you may have a few orders on the go and you want to get this knife out. Stop thinking about other orders. Just concentrate on this one knife. And my sort of mantra is, I'm trying to make the best knife that I can, not the fastest or not the cheapest. So just take your time, give this one all of your attention, And when it's done, it's done. You know, it's a case of, you know, it's, I hate telling a customer it'll be done by X date, because that doesn't allow me to give my best work. The best way to give your best work is to give it your full time and your full attention. So just slow down, take your time, and things just will get better. Every knife you make will get better. And when it comes to time, value it as well. So, I mean, if we're looking at things like tool costs and things like that, I'm at the moment in the market for a mill, simply because I need to
a mill?
A mill.
Oh, a mill.
A desktop mill.
Oh, a mill.
The amount of time that I'm taking to make these little grooves in these knives that I'm doing at the moment by using a grinder, it's taking a lot of time. And I'm looking at a mill thinking, oh, God, man, that's expensive. But, I mean, you've got to value your time and think, well, if it saves me that amount of time getting this machine, I'm going to get the machine. So, yeah, so my tip is all about time. Take your time and also value it. If you can find another way of doing it, it may cost money, but, you know, make that calculation. If, you know, is my time worth more than, you know, what the effect of this machine would have? So that's mine.
Well, my tip is, if you're going to do some sort of impression contest, and you're going to do an impression, and you're going to be brought up with other people, and there's going to be somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose, do it gracefully. If there are new listeners, in the last episode of 2018, there was an impression contest of me. It's ridiculous, but it's fine. And a few guys, and I need to make a couple corrections, are the champion, the undisputed, well, he's a little disputed. The champion is Mike DePell. We were calling him Dipple all the time, and I got a firm talking to after he won that it's Mike DePell. So, Mike, congratulations. Mike, and we had some people who entered late, and that's the reason why he won. You're the winner. You're still the champion. I got a message from Josh Scott saying he feels like he should have won. And as I said in the last episode, I'm taking care of you. I'm taking care of you, Josh. Josh actually sent me a screenshot from a celebrity listener. Salem Straub apparently felt like Josh was robbed. So he sent. I got a screenshot of Josh talking to Salem, and Salem says, "You tell Fader that you should have won." And he sent it to me, and I said, "Hey, Josh, if Jared Thatcher of Boot Hill Blades had submitted in time, you would have been a fucking strong third. So if you submit it, and then gracefully accept the judging." And we had another guy his name was Winklebilt Custom Knives. He did this long impression of me that was
fine.
It was fine. Look, I'm not going to say anything. I think the guy's got cauliflower ears and a black eye. I got a feeling he's an MMA fighter. So as far as I'm concerned, I would have given you – you did a good job. It was fine. And then the best part was that Josh Scott decided to – he listened to what we said about, look, you got to clear your throat. And then he redid his impression. But the best part was, after doing two impressions of me, he had to go on and say, "I just want you all to know that Jeff Fader is a friend of mine." He must have had – he's a friend of mine. He must have been getting, like, messages from people saying, "What are you doing? Who is this guy that you're, like, constantly making fun of? I'm not fucking famous. I'm nobody. I'm a fucking blip on a blip." And apparently, I think there's some people went after him, like, "What are you doing? You're going after some, like – mentally challenged person? What is this impression?" So he had to, like, back off and apologize. That was my favorite part. But so my tip of the day is to, you know, be graceful in defeat.
Welcome to Knife Talk Podcast.
You know what? That was the fucking best. You know what? You win. You're the champion. I like your impression of his impression of my impression. Do that again. Do that one more time.
Welcome to Knife Talk Podcast.
It's kind of like a Apu in there. Apu from The Simpsons.
Come again.
That was a good one. That was a good one, Craig. That was a good one. I'm back at it. So here's what we do. So every episode, we bitch. That's really what it comes down to. It's not where's the beef. It's is we just bitch and moan. So this year, we're going to bitch and moan about something. And last year, we had the All Beef Review, which is, our most popular episode. Everyone, they bitched, and we read about their bitching. So here we are. This is we're going to start to bitch. So somebody start off bitching.
Okay, I'll start. Stickers on things. So I've just got a brand new load of G10 sheets in, and they've all got these stickers on, which is great. It tells you what they are, the size, the color, and all the rest of it. But they just take ages to remove. They leave this horrible residue on there, and it just drives me crazy. I know you can just get some acetone, wipe them off, but it's just another step that doesn't need to happen. So if you're sending out G10 sheets, you're a supplier, just write on them. Use a marker pen. Just write on them what they are. No need for a sticker. No need.
And that's where the pens always, they always, under the stickers where the Sharpie is.
yeah. Anybody else? What are we beefing about this week?
All right. So this week, I got a beef with people that basically talking shit about stuff made in China. You'll hear people say, oh, it was probably made in China.
The invasion is continuing. Like, the invasion's continuing. Go ahead.
No. And I know there's like a lot of political shit going on right now with China and stuff. So I'm not really trying to get into that. It frustrates me when people are like, oh, it was probably just made in China. And I understand, you know, being patriotic and wanting the best things that you own in your life made in the United States. But like, I'm using an Apple phone and an Apple MacBook right now. They were made in China. If you look around your life and I imagine probably like 50% of the stuff you own was manufactured in China. And China gets a bad rap because, you know, shitty stuff can be made in China. Shitty stuff can be made anywhere. But that comes back to who's having it made. Not the maker, but who's paying to have it made. And they're trying to up their profit margins by paying as little as possible to have a thing made. And so what happens? You get it, you use it, it falls apart, and then you blame China. But you should be blaming whoever the fuck had
that
thing made.
Shout out to China.
Hey, man, I'm part Chinese.
Shout out to China.
I'm part Chinese. So, but really, I am. But anyway.
Which part? From the ankles down? Keep going.
It's from my great-grandma's side.
All right.
But anyways, it drives me nuts because people are always giving shit made in China a hard time. The reality is, really great stuff can be made in China. Some of the best technology that we have in the world comes from China, but still everybody loves talking shit about China. And it's really the companies having stuff made that should be getting the guff.
Might I just slightly counterpoint your beef with respect to your
I didn't realize we're
conversations. With peace and love and respect to your ancestors. The made in China thing, the really issue is the treatment of the workers in China is not very good.
That's
one of the reasons why you're getting stuff at a fraction of a cost. So you're talking about you know, you talk about the iPhone. I know they put the Foxconns, they put nets outside there. So when people jump out to commit suicide, they're thwarted at the end. I agree with you, but at the same time, you understand that, you know, this cheap Chinese shit comes at a cost, and it's the human cost. These poor people they're not well taken care of. If you have to have a job where you're living in a dormitory and then you're kind of forced to keep working, that ain't so great either. So I'm with you. I buy shit. I bought some goddamn G10 from China, and goddamn it, I love it until everybody else started buying it. And all of a sudden, now I get this pallet full of goddamn cherry red G10. But at the same time, it's like we need to – because we're going to get messages. People are going to message you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I'm sorry.
So
I should have been more clear.
Peace and love to your Chinese ancestors.
I wasn't saying that.
Maleko. You're all squared away, man. I'm with you, my brother.
I'm Okay, I wasn't saying that stuff should be made at the cost of the well-being of others.
I know. I'm just talking about the quality of the manufacturer. You have to add that.
Jeff, otherwise, you've had 4 days off and you found a heart in that 4 days.
I'm heartless. You know what? That comes from me not wanting to get these fucking DMs. They're like, what are you talking about? China, fuck China. I don't want those. This is self-serving. Everything I do is self-serving. Trust me, zero heart. I don't give a fuck.
What's your beef then, Jeff?
All right, I was gonna go easy. You know, I was gonna go hard in the paint on something, but I'm gonna save a hard in the paint one. If I could never have to use a 4.5-inch right angle grinder, I would never. I hate them. I used them for 25 years for cleaning welds and for all the stuff you do with a goddamn right angle grinder. I fucking hate them. I hate the smell of cutoff wheels. I hate the sound. I hate everything. And they're the most dangerous. I'm going to tell you two quick dangerous stories. They're fucking terrible. And when I was 19, I was working in this working for the sculptor in Brooklyn. Everything we did was all old, rusty steel. We'd have to take right angle grinders. They were usually 8-inch right angle grinders. And we'd have cup brushes, braided wire cup brushes. All we were doing all day long is wire brushing this old steel to make it look kind of cool, right? And I'll never forget, it was hot in the summertime, and my shirt was like, you know, we were leaning in, and it grabbed my shirt and did what we refer to as the alligator, where it kind of binds up and crawls up towards your neck. Fucking hate that. And then the next thing is these goddamn grinders. Some asshole in the 4.5-inch grinder community says, hey, I got this great idea. This machine isn't dangerous enough.
The 4.5 grinder community.
I don't know. I mean, whoever came up with this goddamn death trap. It's the worst thing in the world. I gotta use them. So somebody, those fuckers, decided that now when I say fuckers, all I think of is Josh Scott saying, hey, fuckers. All right, somebody figured out that if you take, let's make a blade out of a chainsaw wheel. So they made these little 4.5-inch chainsaw bits, and they're like, I mean, danger upon danger upon danger. And I was in college.
You know, I've seen these on Facebook ads all this week. I've never seen them before.
When I was in college, 1996, our senior year in college, my college roommate, shout out to my college roommate, Miles Van Rensselaer. That's Miles Van Ren on Instagram. You should definitely follow him. He's a bronze caster and glassblower. He was working on, he found this stump of wood, and he was going to use this goddamn chainsaw on a chainsaw bit on a carving bit on a 4.5-inch grinder. He starts carving and he hits a knot. The knot comes back and it cuts his tendon in his hand. And thank God, he usually wears these kind of, I used to call them fruity pants. They're kind of like sweatpants, but not. They're like, you know, like lighter material. And it went down, and thank God these fruity pants had a zipper on it. Because all of a sudden I hear the grinder hitting a knot, there's a fucking whirl and a noise, and then it stops.
Shit.
That's right. And I look over, and Miles is holding his hand where his blood's streaming down, and the grinder is fucking at his dick. It's bound up on the goddamn zipper of his goddamn fly. It would have not only cut his dick off and his balls, but it would have cut into him and it would have fucking disemboweled him. It was like the craziest look. He says, he used to call me Fades. So he goes, hey, Fades, I think I got a problem. Blood's gushing everywhere. I have to run and untangle the goddamn, and that's the thing about these right angle grinders. You either do the paddle switch or the switch. The paddle switch sucks because it binds up, it makes your hands tired, but it's a little bit less dangerous. Fuck you and your right angle grinders, and I have to use them, and I hate everything about them. Beef out. You fucker. Okay. As Josh Scott says, you fuckers. You fuckers.
I'm off to start 4.5-inch right angle grinder talk, a new podcast, because apparently there's a big community out there.
It's a fucking right angle grinder community. Everyone uses those goddamn right angle grinders. They're the worst, and I'll give you a pro tip. If you want a little quick pro tip with a right angle grinder, if you're a welder and you want a really quick tip, if you sign your name with a MIG welder, don't make any, just nice and easy, sign your name, don't weave or anything like that, and then you hit it with the right angle grinder, the top, just to take the top off, and then you hit that, you lean into it with the wire brush, you'll have a beautiful signature. Fuck you, right angle grinders. I've had it with you.
Okay, I think we're nearly done with the show. We got one question from the forum, which we've neglected over the last few weeks. But it's busy. There's a lot of people using the forum, helping each other out. So if you've got questions that we haven't answered, head over to knifetalk.net and hit the forum link.
Please don't DM me with your questions. Go to the forum. I'm begging of you. Of you. Please.
And there's plenty of people there who can help too. So JR Knifemaker, he asks about, he's got an endless supply of seasoned hawthorn and oak. The oak being the proper hard bone oak from dead standing branches.
Yeah, baby, hard bone oak.
He's saying he doesn't have a stabilizing setup, and he's wondering what woods lend themselves to use non-stabilized. So what woods are you using that don't have to be stabilized, basically? What do we think? Shall I go first?
Yes.
Okay, any sort of, I wouldn't say any hardwood, but things like African hardwoods, ebony and you know, that really hard stuff. If trying to stabilize that is just no point, because it's super, super dense. There's no air in there at all. So anything like that, I mean, there's no point in stabilizing. There's things like amaret and things like that, which we get here in France. Some walnut as well, which is super hard. Any sort of heartwood, I'd say, it probably isn't worth stabilizing. And they're going to be super, super hard.
I've used that Zeracote, and that doesn't need to be stabilized. And then, I don't know if this is a big thing. I know that, I don't know if people use Ipe very much in knife making, but that shit is so dense, they store it in the bottom of a river. I mean, yeah, you get much more stabilized than that.
Yeah. But I mean,
right.
You know, there's those woods, but I mean, if you do want a stabilizing setup, they're not too expensive. I think the most expensive part really is getting the stabilizing resins, particularly here in Europe, because there's not really a supplier of, you know, everybody uses cactus juice. There's not
but
really
that stuff's great because it doesn't, you don't have to throw it out. You can keep reusing it.
Yeah, yeah, but there isn't really a supplier here in Europe. So I use 100 Term, which is a similar thing that's made in Russia. But yeah, I suppose that's the barrier for a lot of people, getting the resins, because the actual machine is probably $100. You'd probably be able to get the pump and the chamber needed.
The old pump and chamber. Right. The old pump and chamber.
Well,
go ahead.
And in the U.S., K&G is a great resource for sending material to. And actually, I think you can send it there from anywhere. But for the costs, I mean, you can send a medium flat rate box and have them send it back, and it would cost about $150. I think the last time we sent wood out, it depends on how much, I guess, resin uptake there is into the material.
Yeah, they weigh it before and after, right?
Exactly. And so, but I think, I think using them, especially depending on how you value your time, if you're really into stabilizing wood, like, I suggest do it. But if you would rather not stabilize it, and you think you can spend your time more effectively elsewhere, I would suggest just sending it out to K&G or someone else who can process the material, because by the time it gets back, it's professionally done by a company that's been doing it for fucking like 20 years, and they do a really good job.
Shout out to K&G for sure.
Yeah, I've thought about stabilizing, but I know that I don't really give a shit about doing the stabilizing, basically, and putting the wood through that process. And again, trusting somebody who's been doing it for decades, I'd rather just send it to them to do the job right. But regarding other woods that I've used that weren't stabilized, so the African blackwoods, the ebony, ironwood is another one. Cocobolo, which is like a rosewood from Central America and Mexico. There aren't very many woods that I would use unstabilized. Snakewood is another one. And a lot of them is because they're so dense, not just dense from the fibers being very tight, but because they're waxy and full of resin. That's the other reason. Some woods just will not stabilize because they have their own natural resin in the material they can't stabilize.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't put you don't need a stabilized snake wood.
I've never used stabilized
snake
wood.
You never put that ever. Put that snake wood up in that chamber? Put on that vacuum pump on that snake wood?
I know where you're going. I know. Ah,
come
going.
On, baby. Nah. You're not gonna put that little pump on that snake wood. Come on, baby. That chamber.
But you mentioned Coco Bola there. I think that's probably a good example. So if you're grinding through some wood, some sanding down some wood, and it's gumming up your belts really, really quickly, which Coco Bola does all the time, and it's
100%.
It's horrible stuff. But that's the kind of stuff that probably doesn't need stabilizing because it's super dense. It's like gummy. You know, it's not going to take any resin anyway.
You fuckers. Come on, give me one more time. Give me one more time, Craig. Come on.
Welcome to Knife Talk Podcast.
That should be in our fucking bumper, dude. You should do that in our bumper.
Should do.
Yeah, you know what? That was we're back to, you know what you should do.
exactly.
Fucking Jeff, fall for the trap. God damn it.
That's a show. So, a reminder of a few things. There's the forum. At knifetalk.net. We've got the supplier list there at knifetalk.net as well. We've got the Knife Talk t-shirts. We've got some new t-shirts coming. Also, remember, we got this amazing discount for AM Concepts for 10% off one of their grinders, and they're already cheap. Also, support Even Heat. They're amazing. They're Even Heat. They're the best in the business. And that's it from us.
Is there a sticker thing coming out? Are you getting any stickers or something?
We're getting stickers. Aww. So the last few episodes, we've dropped audio in from people. So if they've got a question, if you as a listener have a question or whatever, send us a video and we'll rip that audio off and we can put it into the show. And if you appear on the show, you'll have a little sticker. I've appeared on Knife Talk.
Welcome to Knife Talk Podcast. Don't send him nothing. He complained. I'm taking care of him. Don't worry about him.
That's a full circle. That's Jeff doing an impression of somebody doing an impression of Jeff.
Crazy times.
Crazy times.
Lock it up, baby.